From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Tristan Ozbe, Hungarian State Secretary for the Aid of Persecuted Christians and the Hungary Helps Program. Let's now join Hank and Secretary Ozbe in their conversation.
What's happening now is we have a demographic time bomb that is threatening a Western world that is seemingly blind to the polygamous rush of migrant Muslims who are filling the vacuum left by aging, dying, and aborted Europeans. And while Western civilization continues to coddle this Islamic time bomb, it is simultaneously cultivating a rash of self-destructive ideals. We're embracing all kinds of ideals that are antithetical to a Christian worldview. Your comment.
Well, first of all, there are not only many peaceful Muslim people, but I have met several Muslim people who have risked their lives to protect their Christian compatriots. So there are Muslim people of compassion. And also, I would not want to comment on Islam or the Muslim faith as a faith group. I always find it important that when I criticize Islamism, I always refer to political Islam, which is not a religion, but a political ideology. It draws inspiration from the theological principles of the Muslim faith, but then it distorts it. It creates an aggressive political context to it and uses it as a justification for its horrible actions. But when it comes to political Islam, as the extremist movement, it is true that it has, as every extremist idea, an oversimplified worldview, which makes a distinction of the two different regions in the world. One type of region is where the Sharia law is introduced, the land of Islam, and the other, the haram land, or the land of the infidels, that is unpure, therefore, which has to be occupied by all means, by the sword or by deceiving the people living there. So, for example, by migration as well. And this is a very aggressive and expansive political ideology. And Europe, specifically within the Christian civilization, could only stand up to this aggressive political ideology if the European or in the other Christian countries, if the Christian cultural identity was strong. But the cultural identity is very much weakened. The Western civilization, the Western countries had turned away from their Christian values and identity. Not only they turned away, but they are denying it. And quite recently, they started to attack it. So they are trying to push out any Christian reference from the public discourse. They are trying to limit the freedom of conscience of Christian people in the West by discriminatory laws as well. So of course, if there is a vacuum of identity, then the new, more powerful and aggressive ideology will simply run over that identity vacuum. So when we are looking at the state of Christian civilization, what we see that in the East, in Asia and in Africa, there is a humanitarian and human rights crisis, but in the West, there is an identity crisis. While in the East, they are blowing up Christian churches, the West, they are closing down the churches or converting them into mosques. In Hungary, we are building new churches. Just in the last 10 years of the Orbán government, we have renovated or built more than 1,000 churches in Hungary, trying to serve as an example in that as well.
Wow. This is something you alluded to earlier in the conversation, but I thought it might be worth expanding on from your perspective. You faced hard totalitarianism, at least as a child. So you have a sense from a historical standpoint of what hard totalitarianism looks like. Can you talk about soft totalitarianism? How we may not be facing the gulags in places like America and other places in the EU, but we are facing soft totalitarianism, meaning that if we don't submit to the political correctness of the culture, we end up losing our jobs, our livelihoods, or even our voices in culture.
Well, thank you for this question. I assume that we are on the same page, and probably you wouldn't disagree to say that this sort of extremist liberalism that we experience in the West is actually a totalitarian ideology. It is trying to control the narrative in every segment of a person's life, not only the political level or the governmental level, but it tries to control how we act in a workplace, what we can tell others, and also it tries to control our definition or views on family, on what is gender or sex, who is a woman and who is a man. And if everybody makes a statement or any gesture that is at least a tiny bit inconsistent with this dogmatic liberal narrative, he or she is fired, he becomes an outcast, he's censored, as we see in the big, absolutely liberal social media platforms and so on. Because we have noticed that there is a very hard push from the extremist gender ideology lobby in the European Union before it comes mandatory for the European Union's member state to implement those policies that give a free way to extremist gender ideology. We have amended our constitution. I will give you another quote. This amendment is about the family. And once again, the quote is from the Hungarian constitution. Hungary shall protect the institution of marriage as the union of a man and a woman established by voluntary decision, and the family as the basis of the survival of the nation. So by stating in our constitution that marriage is between a man and a woman, you wouldn't imagine the political backlash Hungary and the Hungarian government has received because of that. There are already being on the European Union level sanctions trying to be proposed against Hungary just because going against the liberal narrative. And the governing party of Hungary had basically been forced to choose to leave its European party family because sticking to the traditional idea of marriage. And this is something what the government experiences, but I don't need to quote, especially to the audience of your podcast, how, for example, in America, Christian people not only received death threats, but has been also put into trial because they refused to serve, for example, a gay marriage ceremony on the grounds of their religious principles. So I'm not sure if this should be called soft totalitarianism anymore. It is becoming more and more oppressive. And when we are looking at the actions that were taken by, for example, the Black Lives Matter activists and also extremist liberal and anarchist activists in the US and in Western Europe, it also becomes more and more violent. So it's a totalitarian idea to its deepest core, and it's a totalitarian system in the making.
I love what you said. And I've never thought about it as you just said it. Maybe we shouldn't be calling it soft totalitarianism anymore. Perhaps we were using that designation to make the distinction between the gulags and the kind of oppression, but it is anything but soft today. You're talking about the building blocks of civil society, of marriage, of church, of government. They all rest atop the foundation of human life, but none is more significant than marriage. And I am so happy to hear what your country has been doing from the standpoint of its constitution itself. And I wonder how a prime minister like Viktor Orban has been able to stand against the tide or the tyranny of political correctness. How has he been able to do that? I mean, that takes a lot of fortitude, takes a lot of strength. I mean, he's being condemned in all kinds of forums, but he's stuck to his guns.
Well, there is a very short and simple answer to that question, and that is he's capable of doing so because of the support of the Hungarian people that re-elected the Orbán government for the third consecutive time with a super constitutional majority. Without the support of the Hungarian people, this would not be possible to fight this good fight on this level. But the Hungarian people choosing the Orbán government again and again and again means that the majority of the Hungarian people stand behind these principles and this idea.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Secretary Tristan Özbay. For years, emigres from the former Soviet bloc have been telling Rod Dreher they see telltale signs of soft totalitarianism cropping up in America. Identity politics are intruding into every aspect of life. Progressives marginalize conservative, traditional Christians, and other dissenters. Technology and consumerism hasten the possibility of a corporate surveillance state. And the pandemic, having put millions out of work, leaves our country especially vulnerable to demagogic manipulation. In Live Not by Lies, Rod Dreher draws on the wisdom of Christian survivors of Soviet persecution to prepare American Christians for the dangerous days ahead. To receive your copy of Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org.
For years, emigres from the former Soviet Union have seen telltale signs of soft totalitarianism cropping up in America. Identity politics intrude into every aspect of life. Progressives marginalize conservative Christians. Technology and consumerism create the possibility of a corporate surveillance state. And the pandemic has made our country vulnerable to demagogic manipulation. Alexander Solzhenitsyn famously said that one of the biggest mistakes people make is assuming totalitarianism can't happen in their country. Many American Christians are making that mistake today, sleepwalking through the erosion of our freedoms. Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents by Rod Dreher, will help equip you for the long resistance. To receive your copy of Live Not by Lies, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit the Christian Research Institute online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership
at equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Secretary Tristan Osbe as they continue their conversation.
I think it's wonderful what you're doing in your country in terms of drawing attention to the plight of persecuted Christians around the world. One of those things I understand is that from time to time, I don't know the details, but you actually take the buildings in Budapest and you illuminate them in red. Is that right?
It is true, yes. It is actually the initiative of an international charity organization called Aid for the Church in Need. It's called Red Wednesday. Each November, at one particular day of November, they ask people and institutions in different countries to highlight their buildings, like landmark buildings in red, to commemorate the blood of the Christian martyrs who are being murdered for their faith all around the world. In Hungary, we have joined this initiative not on the NGO or church level, but on the governmental level. So, yes, this is something that we do in our beautiful capital city, Budapest, which I hope all the audience will once visit, possibly after this podcast. We have highlighted the bridges on the River Danube that separates the two parts of the town, and also the four major churches of the four biggest Christian denominations in the country.
And while you highlight the plight of Christian persecution, we're talking about the vast majority of persecutions around the world are against Christians. As you've pointed out, and I want to underscore once more, your support for Christians is explicit, I'm using your words, but by no means exclusive. You're concerned about persecution in general, and perhaps you want to elaborate on that once more.
Yes. Well, as I said before, supporting only Christians, that's not what Christianity tells us to do. They deserve special attention because there are such large in numbers who are suffering and they have been neglected. Therefore, we are supporting other communities and faith groups as well. And you know, talking about the practical also consideration, supporting only Christian communities would be also counterproductive because it would further stigmatize the Christian minority communities, you know, that they are usually the false, claims that Christians are the agents of the West and so on, or they are not patriotic, you know. So favoritism would be immoral, but also counterproductive for the Christians. And that is also important, and I'm glad you asked. Even where we are supporting the Christian community, we design it that way that all the other communities living together with the Christians are having benefit for that support. So giving you one example, in Syria, we support three Catholic hospitals. Three Catholic hospitals that are in a country in Syria where more than 50% of the healthcare infrastructure had been destroyed because of the war. And in these hospitals, about 80% of the patients who are treated there are Muslim. And a local Syrian church leader who is managing this hospital explained to me what happened. So let's say there is a Muslim patient who is sick. Falling sick, let's call him Muhammad. This Muslim person can be a target or a subject of Islamist radicalization by a radical imam who is inciting him against Christians. Now, this person, Muhammad, has only one hospital to go to gain cure, to get treatment, and that's a Catholic hospital. So Muhammad goes to the Catholic hospitals and is treated by a doctor who is called Butros, that's Peter in Arabic, it's a Christian name, or treated by a nurse called Rita, which is also a Christian name. A Muslim person who had experienced the solidarity and the compassion of their Christian countrymen will never be ever radicalized against Christians. And likewise, in Iraq, we support a Christian school for internally displaced refugee children. And there, together Christian and Muslim children from Christian and Muslim families go together, and after years of the war, they can finally get education for the children. So this way, we don't only support Christians, but we enable the Christian communities to extend their helping hand to the majority communities or other communities who are living side by side with them. This way, we support peaceful coexistence through our projects.
What a glorious illustration. I do think that we should probably start winding up by talking about how religious freedom benefits society and the significance of Christianity on the world. I mean, you're unabashedly Christian, and a lot of people see Christianity in maybe crusader terms, but they don't realize what Christians have done in the world, their impact on the abolition of slavery, their energizing civil rights movements, their charitable works, the fact that Christians were at the forefront of establishing schools and literacy, that Christians were at the forefront of science and modern medicine. So Christianity has made a vast imprint on the world, and that message needs to continue to be communicated.
Absolutely. It needs to be communicated. If I can focus a little bit on my work, what I see in the West is something I came up with a new term, or at least I haven't heard it before, that is Christian guilt. You know, you have probably heard of the expression German guilt, meaning that German people, even generations after the Nazi regime, still are guilty for the crimes that has been committed by their ancestors. I heard the term white male guilt. I heard that in the US, white men feeling inherently guilty because of patriarchy and so on. This is something I observed when I was trying to gain allies for our missions in the West, that Christian people are sometimes reluctant to come to the aid of persecuted Christians. Western Christians don't want to do that because they feel guilty, because they accepted the usually liberal narrative that Christianity was the ideology behind the colonization and other terrible atrocities committed in the world. And perhaps some terrible murderers and oppressors used elements of Christian ideology to justify their actions. Of course, those must have been, you know, distorted and falsified Christian ideas. But I think the Western Christian people need to be educated about the role and effects of Christianity, what Christianity played in our history and all of humanity. The Western Christian people needs to understand what you just referred to in your question. In the medieval times in Europe, for centuries, the church, the churches, the Christian institutions were the only one providing healthcare to people. There weren't state healthcare. There weren't private institutions. They were the only one running hospitals or hospices or taking care of the poor. There weren't, you know, social benefit programs and social security back in the medieval times. The Christian churches for centuries were the only ones providing education, which is very, you know, especially striking when there is this absolutely false and incorrect narrative trying to portray Christian churches as the ones that are anti-science. No. For about a millennia, Christianity and Christian institutions were the driving force of science and human development. The first universities on the world were, you know, church-funded and based universities. And we do need to understand that. We also need to understand that currently in the world, the Christian and the faith-based organizations take the larger part of charity activities in the world. I never heard of an atheist or anti-church charity organizations. Wherever I go in Africa, Asia, in the Middle East, I always find devoted Christian humanitarians and charity organizations. We need to understand that. So I see that we share this mission. you and I, and I hope that we have these Christian voices in the world.
Tristan Osbe, he is the State Secretary for the Aid of Persecuted Christians and the Hungry Helps Program. I am so proud and pleased to have you on Hank Unplugged. Thank you so much for the education you've given our audience all around the world. And I pray that God will richly bless you on a personal level and also richly bless your outreach to persecuted Christians, and that as a result of your example, that what you are doing will spread to other countries around the world.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Tristan Osbe, Hungarian State Secretary for the Aid of Persecuted Christians and the Hungry Helps Program. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our daily commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you the book, Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents by Rod Dreher. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more.
For years, émigrés from the former Soviet Union have seen telltale signs of soft totalitarianism cropping up in America. Identity politics intrude into every aspect of life. Progressives marginalize conservative Christians. Technology and consumerism create the possibility of a corporate surveillance state. And the pandemic has made our country vulnerable to demagogic manipulation. Alexander Solzhenitsyn famously said that one of the biggest mistakes people make is assuming totalitarianism can't happen in their country. Many American Christians are making that mistake today, sleepwalking through the erosion of our freedoms. Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents by Rod Dreher, will help equip you for the long resistance. To receive your copy of Live Not by Lies, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit the Christian Research Institute online at equip.org. That's equip.org.